If you have a hearing loss, then you're not getting those signals to your brain. And they don't come back. Once you lose it, so far you've lost it, and you have to put a hearing instrument in or something. I just want people to wear hearing protection, whether they buy it from us or buy it from someone else. I think our quest is to try and make these things part of people's kit. I always say your future self will thank you, because like you said, you don't get it back. So that's our big deal. Everybody tends to turn them up too much, because you put them in and then you think you can't hear anything, and then you turn them up and you're hearing too much. You're not weird. It doesn't come to everybody easy, and it's not the most normal thing, and it takes a lot of time.
This hearing protection thing, it's not something for me that just clicked. It's been like a learning curve, and honestly, I've learned more about it today just talking to you. So hopefully this conversation moves the needle for some folks, myself included. Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. We are joined today by CEO of All Clear Outdoors, Mark Musselman. Goes by Mark, as he just informed me. Mark, it's great to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to see you. It's been a little while since I've seen you in person, so I've seen you on a lot of these, but...
I imagine so, yeah, but that was two Septembers ago, right, when I came down and you gave me a tour of the shop, yeah. Me and Kevin, and Rich was there, and yeah.
That's crazy it's been that long.
Yeah, time flies, that's for sure.
Yep.
What's going on in your world? It is December here for two Minnesota guys. What have you been up to lately?
Man, well, since it's been absolutely snowing and freezing for the last 4 weeks, I've been spending a lot of time here, unfortunately, just working on projects and working on new models and, yeah, trying to finish up this year and get ready for next year and that kind of stuff. So I'd like to be out in the woods a little bit more, but no, man. It's been a little brutal here lately.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I discussed it at length with the guests I recorded with earlier this week, which hasn't aired yet, but it will. But yeah, winter showed up basically overnight after very relatively mild kind of season. So like you, I felt very content. I was fortunate to take advantage of those good early season conditions. And I was listening to your conversation with Bob Owens and Kevin. You had mentioned our Minnesota, Wisconsin deer seasons, right? So you kind of get, if you live close enough to Wisconsin, you kind of get those two bonus weeks. The secret is out, I guess. But in this year, we really needed that because it took such a long time for it to cool off and like get very fall-like. Those extra couple of weeks, even more so now in hindsight, with how quickly the cold and the snow showed up around Thanksgiving, I felt super content, and then we got those conditions, and it was cold, and it dipped below freezing, and it never came back up, and like you, I spent a lot more time in the office, and I wasn't frantically checking the weather every day like I have a tendency to do this time of year, but I was, of course, waiting and watching for a day or two like we just had. Did you get out?
I did.
Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yep. I mean, I think you kind of have to. You just kind of angle those days. Oscar and I got out yesterday, and I mean, it was still pretty deep. We definitely had to slog through some stuff, and we were both pretty exhausted by the end of it and didn't have many contacts or anything like that, but it was still good to be out there. And I mean, man, what a beautiful day. The sun was out. It was reflecting off the snow. I mean, it was like a, you know, it's like walking in a photograph yesterday out here. How about you?
I went yesterday. Were you after grouse or pheasants?
Grouse. Yeah.
Okay, you did. Okay.
Yep. I was really torn Tuesday. Between what it was that I was going to do, but you know, you got to get out.
You didn't go Tuesday. You went Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So just so I'll walk the listeners through. Now I wanted to talk to you about this because we were texting last week and we were both kind of eyeing these days as a possibility to get out for maybe one last rip, right? Tuesday, you're south of me, you're Twin Cities metro area. So yep. I know it was probably pretty warm down there. Like I said, we were below freezing for like 3 weeks and we finally got above it yesterday and we were way above it. It was 42, 43 here. You guys must have been mid 40s or above.
Yep. Yep. I think some places in Minnesota hit 50 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nice. I was scraping the driveway and that kind of stuff, but I was conflicted because they were predicting really, really high winds. And we did get some of those winds, but they really didn't show up until Tuesday night after dark, at least for me. So I decided early on in the day on Tuesday that I was going to go one day, not both days. So I just said, I'll go Wednesday, middle of the week, and I will take Tuesday off and not go, which then the temperature climbs. And I keep looking out my office at the trees. I'm like trying to see, oh, gosh, they're not really blowing that much. Like I could be out there hunting. And I had other stuff to do, right? Like anybody, but I didn't go. And then I was kind of kicking myself all day because Tuesday was a really, really nice day. In hindsight, I've kind of changed my tune after hunting yesterday, but I was really worried about that. I just sort of like missed that perfect day, which is just my nature. Like I'm overthinking it, right? But so then the forecast yesterday, it was not supposed to get as warm. And that was sort of the confliction for me, where I was just thinking, oh man, did I miss my chance? But I went yesterday and I would now in hindsight describe, like you, basically yesterday was perfect. I don't know that we touched 30 degrees, but we were close to it. And that I was hunting in the snow as well. And that little extra effort, exertion, hiking through the snow. I mean, I warmed up so quick and stayed warm the entire time that I immediately started thinking, I bet if we were out here Tuesday, it probably would have felt like too hot, you know, like we would have been too warm, just kind of slogging through this snow and all that. But anyways, yeah, we had really nice conditions. The snow, I was a little concerned that with all the, like it really softened up and kind of melted on Tuesday. So I was wondering if maybe it would be real hard crystallized yesterday, but that wasn't the case. It was actually still pretty soft. So all things considered, yeah, we got a great hike in the grouse woods. We did not flush a lot of birds, but it all came together on one bird. And it was like, we checked every box. The only thing I could say is I ran Hartley, my older dog, for 90 minutes out the gate, and we didn't see any birds with him. So that was kind of a bummer. I'm hoping he gets into a bird every time we go out, but as you always are, but we didn't. But Rose found, she actually pointed a pair of birds right away, and I was able to get a look at that and got one of those birds. So, I mean, just to see a bird and be out on a day like yesterday, I was feeling very happy, satisfied.
It's amazing. That sounds so cool. Yeah. I always kind of talk about, I grew up in southwest Nebraska. So I grew up a pheasant hunter and a quail hunter and a duck hunter. And I would read about grouse hunting in the north woods and woodcock hunting and in magazines back then, and I was just like, what is, you know, what's that all about, and
what's this about,
why is people so ate up about this, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And then I moved up here now about 30 years ago, and it is incredible. Like, if you haven't done it, you got to do it. And well, the first time you do it, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, you're going to be scratching your head for a while.
It's just like the winters up here, right? Like, we were just talking the other day about when we first moved up here, it was like 95, 96, and the winters were normal Minnesota, brutal ice, snow. And we laugh because, like, the last couple winters here have been like Nebraska winters, everybody I say, you know, and I'm like, hey, this is just like living where I used to live. It's pretty deep. You know, it snows, it melts, it looks kind of nasty outside. And I just wasn't ready for moving up to Minnesota. Like, I mean, like, you don't drive over the driveway until you get this stuff shoveled off. You know, you make sure it's clean at the end where the snowplow
comes.
That's
a Minnesotan for you right there.
Right. You know, like, there's just things that you just do and I didn't do. And man, you pay the price. Like, I'm out there with an axe trying to chop the ice away from the end of the driveway where the snowplow has come. And And so it's just funny how you progress through wherever you live. Like, you know, if you moved to Arizona from here, there'd be like all kinds of surprises. But Minnesota will get you. All the upper Midwest places will get you if you're not ready. And I think grouse hunting is like that too, you know, and woodcock hunting. Like, it's not the same, and it's hard. And I'm still learning. You know, I haven't done it all the years that I've lived up here, but yeah. I've been wanting to do it. And I keep having this, you know, I actually kind of made a goal this year into next year and the next. It's, you know, I want to be a better woodsman. I want to be better at, you know, not just heading out into some state forest, national forest, WMA, whatever, and just tromping and walking. You know, my mentality is still that. I think of a pheasant hunter, you know, looking at, you know, those kinds of cover, and just, if you do it right, you look at it and you're like, oh, there's birds in there. And I haven't really, after even all these years, transferred all that wisdom over to grouse hunting and woodcock hunting just a little bit, and starting to meet more people that I'm actually doing it with. Never really had too many mentors up here, but it gets exciting as you start to learn more about, oh yeah, like this is where you want to be, or you're looking at on X, you know, and you're trying to scope things out. Yeah. And then to be out on a day like yesterday, like you and myself, man, it just is incredible being in the woods. And yeah, pretty cool stuff. Pretty lucky to be up here, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. You gotta embrace some of the suck, you know, that comes with it. But
yep.
Again, that's, everybody could probably paint a similar picture about where they live and kind of the thing, you know, the things that you love about it and the things that you don't. But we do get four seasons here, and that is just something that, you know, it's special. You really appreciate each one. You get all of them. And as a bird hunter, it's gives you that sort of that carrot at the end of to get out there and just go for a hike. And I mean, that's one of the, I love being, when it's cold, I love active sports, cross country yeah. skiing, bird hunting. If I can do it, I like to go hike and sort of get heated up and just kind of be out there. And anytime you get one more day, like it felt really good to get a December hunt in for me this year. Whether that's our last one or not, I don't know yet, but I have a hard time saying like it is my last one until it's kind of like the calendar says it's over. But we'll see. That might be my last one, and if it is, I will have zero issues with that.
Right on. Well, and we might have a few more. The weather people are talking about not dipping back into that 17 below stuff, so.
Okay, I haven't looked too far ahead after I was solely focused on yesterday, so I know we're going to get cold tonight. The thing that I don't like is, you know, we had two really nice days in the woods. That really deteriorated the snow conditions, and I think we're going to be below zero again tonight. So that's not ideal for the birds.
No, I was thinking about that even on my way in this morning, thinking about looking at maybe doing some pheasant hunting over the next couple weeks before everything wraps up. And I was like, man, if that's, coming into work today, the snow like around the building is gone after last night, because we had rain down here and then, you know, well into the 30s, and it's gone if it's not drifted. And I was like, whoa. And I was thinking, man, we get the rain like they're talking about, and then it turns to ice. I was feeling for those birds. I was like, oh man, that is not going to be good.
You said something funny. I had to laugh that I didn't go hunting on Tuesday, but what I did do was take the opportunity for, because like you said, we had, you know, it was really cold, and we had some people in my household drove over snow that was not shoveled. So we had some compacted tire tracks. When it got to 40 degrees on Tuesday, I was out there eagerly with the scraper, and I got the whole driveway clean. And normally, I haven't always been this way, because we didn't have, our driveway was not great, but we replaced it a couple years ago. So we got this beautiful asphalt driveway, and I was out there, I got it perfectly clean. Some of my neighbors walked by and they're like, boy, you went to work. I was like, when you have a new driveway, you have a little bit more incentive to get right. that baby scraped clean. So I was very proud of that on Tuesday.
You're getting the old man sort of thing going on there. You know, like I like nice sharp edges at the edge of the driveway, you know, and clean it all off.
I did just turn 40 last Saturday, Mark. So maybe maybe I'm getting there.
That is one of the signals that you are getting there, you know.
Significant milestone.
20-year-olds don't care about getting out and, you know, cleaning all the ice off the driveway.
No, I don't think so. Oh, I love that. Okay, before we leave yesterday's ceremonial possible last hunts, what did you, because your comments about sort of grouse hunting and stuff, what did you have in mind yesterday? Did you have a spot picked out? Where did you go? Like, what did you try to hunt yesterday? Or was it just, I'm just going to go here because I just want to be outside today?
I think it was more that, you know, I actually, what was funny is I was on the way there and I was like, oh, I didn't really scout anything. I didn't think about it. I was just going to go, you know, maybe an hour north and just kind of bomb around, you know, get the dog and I out and get a little exercise in and just check things out and go to some places maybe that I knew that, you know, I've seen in the past. But I also kind of went to a few, you know, more ceremonial places that I think I'd had, you know, cool memories with, thinking that it was kind of towards the end. And I just wanted to kind of be in some of those places. But unfortunately, some of those places aren't holding as many birds anymore. You know, it wasn't as deep in as you'd want to go. So that's probably why the outcome was the way it was. But, you know, then I picked a spot that I'd never been before to try and scout it out, you know, and check some things out. And yeah, it just ended up being really cool being out there.
Yeah. Did you see much for grouse tracks at all?
I did. I saw quite a few grouse tracks, especially where they would lead from a trail kind of into a shallow ditch and into the woods, you know, where they're kind of coming in and out. I saw a ton of that. So I was pretty stoked. But, you know, we still had some of that. It was still so warm that the snow was like, you know.
It was real mushy.
It was real mushy and it was sticking to us. You know, it was kind of a mess. But
yeah, I did a similar thing. I have an area that over the last 5-6 years, I've kind of, it's where I love to finish the season. No matter what I think the bird numbers are going to be, it's just, it's a place that it tends to maintain a little bit less snow. Sometimes that's not the case this year. There was plenty of snow this year. So it wasn't that, but it's just like, I've gotten this ritual of kind of ending my season in this area. And it's not one spot. It's a pretty big area, but it's just where I like to finish my season. And we went there and it was just like, it was everything. It was ceremonial would be the way to put it. Just it's like where I want to be. It's kind of where I've finished every season in December or January, whatever it is for the last, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years. And I just love being there. And we didn't. So it's a lot of alders, and there's a lot of alders and grass and swamp grass and stuff. And that can be really, really good, especially if I'm hunting there and it's snow free. It's a really big expansive area where you can kind of wander and weave through it. There's not a lot of young aspen or really, really dense cover. So it's a really enjoyable place to hunt. So that's kind of why I tend to go there. But anyways, we didn't see a lot of tracks, and I was kind of scratching my head about that, just because the one thing I didn't say is that this area doesn't always have the most birds, but the last few years, it's actually been one of my better, more productive areas, which I haven't seen before. So now it's kind of like this combination of, it's one of my favorite places to hunt for all of the other reasons, but now we've got birds in there. So I was expecting, you never know, it's December, right? But I was optimistic that we could have a pretty productive hunt. We ended up flushing 4 grouse in 2.5 hours, which is not a lot, but it was, you know, good. I was very happy with it, but we didn't see a lot of tracks, and I couldn't quite say if that was the thing that I was thinking in my head is either they're not in here because it's too much snow on grass, and like, it just wasn't the kind of snow that you imagine a grouse walking on top of. Or, you know, a week ago when it was all hard, they probably could walk up there, but just didn't see a lot of tracks. So I was wondering if maybe they've just honestly have been spending a lot of time in the trees, because the snow was pretty deep, pretty fluffy for the last 3 weeks ever since we got it. And maybe they're just up in the trees budding. It could have been either or. Eventually, we did get into some tracks. In fact, the first set of grouse tracks I saw, I stopped and I was taking pictures, because that's one of my favorite things about when you have snow in the woods, you get to see those grouse tracks. So I'm taking pictures of this set of tracks in front of me, and I put my phone away and I take a step and this grouse flushes.
Oh my gosh.
Like 5 yards away from me. So I'm pretty sure I was taking pictures of its tracks as it sat there. And I did try to shoot that bird. I missed it.
And it's looking at you while you're doing that.
Yep. I rushed it and missed it. So I finished, again, if that was my last hunt, I finished exactly where I wanted to be. And I just was taking it all. And it was a perfect, perfect day to be in that place. And, we got out there and did it. So, yeah, I was pumped.
Good on you. That's awesome. Very cool.
Do you wear gaiters?
I don't. I've been talking to some guys about that. I just, you know, I just wear the tall boots. And
Like tall rubber boots or something?
Yep. Okay. Tall rubber boots. And I don't know. I have never done it, you know, and I've never felt the need to do it. I was just talking to some guys a couple months ago when I was in South Dakota hunting about it, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you got to give it a try. You know, it's the way to go." How about you?
I'm bringing it up because it's fresh in my mind. I don't wear them a lot. If I'm going to do it, it's going to be this time of year when we have snow on the ground. Yesterday was probably the last few years we've been so lucky where my last hunts have been, you know, maybe an inch or two of snow, but nothing like this. This was the most snow that I've hunted in a few years, just around here, grousewood stuff. But it was the gators. I could not recommend them enough. I'd never wore them ever until I have a pair of First Light gators. They sent them to me a few years ago, and they just sat in the closet for a couple of years, and then somebody finally, yes, give them a try, you know. But I would always go to the tall rubber boots this time of year, but now I'm wearing the gators. I guess they allow you to wear your regular hunting boot, so I'm wearing my crispy boots, but the way they seal at the top, because inevitably, like when I would wear the rubber boots, you're going to get snow and they're going to kick it up on your heels and it's going to get in there and your pants are going to get it wet. The gators basically completely eliminate that. The way they seal up the lower portion of your leg and the top of your boots, it is worth the try. Like I would, if you're curious about it at all and you're getting those recommendations, I would not hesitate to try it because they have exceeded my expectations. I wasn't expecting much, but yesterday, like I said, was the perfect example of like, oh yeah, this is why people wear gators. They're really, really nice.
Well, that's cool. Well, maybe you've pushed me over the edge. Maybe I got to search for some and get some and give them a try.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a bunch of them out there. Some, I know their crispy has some that would like integrate into the boots that I wear, but there's just, I don't think they need to be much, but just having that completely waterproof layer down there. Cause it, you know, it keeps your pants from getting wet. It's just, there's a lot of like sort of downstream effects that I didn't consider on the surface level that they really seem to help with. So if anybody who wears gators is probably like, well, duh. But if you haven't thought about it like me, it's worth a shot. Not a must have, but definitely a nice to have. That's for sure. All right. Well, we should probably talk about Eau Claire Outdoors a little bit, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I talk about it all the time. I always like talking about hunting and different things.
I know. I do too. How did Oscar do yesterday, by the way, in the snow?
He did great. Yeah, he was doing really well until he cut the tip of his ear on something.
He?
Oh my gosh. And he comes out of the woods and he's just got blood all over his face, all over his, because it was flapping over and flapping down. And then of course he was flapping his ears and I was like,
that's always fun.
Oh yeah. And I thought, what did he do? Hit a barbed wire fence or what happened? You know, of course all those things go through your mind. Like, what do we got going on? And I'm looking all over and the blood is just on the surface. And then I see the tip of his ear is dripping and I'm like, oh geez. So that kind of ended that walk a little bit. Then I was like, all right, we got to just chill and get back to the truck and
see what happens here.
Yeah. And do a little quick, you know, EMT business. And we got him back in business. Yeah. He did great. Yeah. He's doing really well.
Yeah. How old is he?
He's eight.
Eight. Okay.
Yep. I'm thinking the time is near for a little compadre for him to. Yeah, I'm thinking so. Yeah.
Another setter?
I think so.
Where are you at in the mental decision-making process?
I'm pretty far down the road, I think. Yep. And like I've said, I talked about how I was a lab guy and had been, you know, I think growing up where I did and hunting what I did. And I think it's one of those things where I just always saw them and thought it would be a cool thing to get a setter. And I thought, as I'm getting a little older, how nice it would be to just, you know, not have to be
totally on game, let the dog do its thing. And yeah.
Yep. So I was thinking about it from that aspect and just on a lark, got one. Man, you know, there's a lot of adjustments to make and a lot of things to get used to. Like for me, I always talk about getting used to not seeing my dog, you know, all the time. And that's been a tough one. Now that I've had one for a while, I think I want to get another one and actually maybe do a better job, you know, training and doing more setter things. I think
second time around.
Yep. Second time around. I think I relied too much on my lab at the same time I had the setter, and I think he missed out on a few things. So yeah, I'm excited to give it another try and press in a little harder.
You really are buying into this whole Minnesota grouse hunter thing.
I am, man. I'm deep. I am deep.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now that actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I did want to dig into that. I've heard bits and pieces of sort of the Eau Claire Outdoors, and I'll probably have you run us through that at some point. But I wanted to go back to the very beginning, growing up in hunting bird dogs. Was that like right from the start, family thing? How'd you get into it all?
Actually, my brother-in-law, Alan, was the first guy to take me hunting. I was, probably around 10 years old and didn't have dogs. And it was just all pheasant hunting and quail hunting. And yeah, I was just back in Nebraska a few weeks ago and talking to him about he had like a 78 Chrysler Cordoba. I don't know if you're even familiar with that. It's literally just like one of those cars with the giant doors, that are like 4 feet long and two-door rear-wheel drive. And off we'd go down the gravel roads in southern Nebraska. And this was kind of the crazy thing, too, that he had a side-by-side shotgun. He had a Savage Fox 12-gauge short barrel. And this was the era of everybody was getting auto loaders, right? Remington 1100, 1187, or pump shotguns. But there wasn't a lot of side-by-side people. There was nobody else in my life but him. And I was kind of like, man, that's kind of what do you got that thing for?
Kind of weird, yeah.
And now I'm like, why didn't I just dive in right away? Because now I am a side-by-side guy. Yeah, so he would just take me hunting and we would walk and, Milo fields, the edges and so just grew up hunting pheasants with him, walking and literally just from the beginning, I was just in love. Like, I just love being in the outdoors. I love walking, the hike, the game, it was really cool. And so when my wife and I got married and we moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, that's when I got my first dog. I wanted a dog and I got a secondhand black lab that was just, he was crazy. He was not a very good dog, but man, that guy could hunt. And he taught me more about, hunting than I knew. I learned to just not walk in straight lines anymore, just follow him wherever he went. And that was in a time when, I hunted a ton. And back then you shot a lot of birds and you ate them. And so that was like what we lived on, it was that kind of level of hunting. And, that's kind of how I got started. So, from about 10 years old, all the way to my, to about 20 before I actually got a bird dog. Before that, it was just walking.
Yeah. And you were hooked.
I was hooked. Yeah. It was so cool. Yeah. It was a good place to grow up.
Was that kind of rural Nebraska?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Southwest Nebraska, south of North Platte. So, you're out there. No big city. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Similar to me, I couldn't tell you why or how or what, but just went on a grouse hunt and saw that bird. And I mean, nothing's changed really. It's just, I've been hooked on that. I mean, the way I go about it and the way I pursue it and all these things, and you learn so much more about it via the dogs. That's the thing I'm maybe most appreciative of today, is just how much more I've learned about them, about grouse and habitat, just chasing my dogs around. But
it's crazy how you start out at very surface level. And then as you age, you sort of get into a little bit more of the scientific part, and it's like a lot of things in life, you never stop learning. Like, there's always the next level or the next thing, or you go hunting with someone different and you're like, oh, I never thought of that. Like, where did you learn that? And that passing on the information from generation to generation, and then people learning new things. And I think it's like trout fishing, grouse hunting, and all these things, you're sort of on this, you're on a hunt. I mean, you're trying to find new places. You're not trying to just lean on knowing what other people have done. It's better to have found somewhere deep in the woods that probably other people have found, but you never found it, and now you found it, so it belongs to you too. And that is just, and then you have this spot, and you know where to go and you know where the other one is. And you just grow and grow. It's just a really, really cool thing. Yeah.
I don't know if that's like universal. I imagine for a lot of people listening to this show, they would probably echo that sentiment, but I would for sure there's just, I get really personal about, like, you get out there and you find that spot, and it's sort of like, you know, it's a little mini achievement for you and the dogs. And then you kind of like, you take it that step further, and like, now it's your little place. And yes, it's other people's spot too, right? It's public land. And I like how you, it's like, it's, you know, it's your spot too. I like that. But I, that's one of the things that it's not only the hunt for the bird, but it's the hunt for the adventure and the experience. Yeah. And, you know, I think we've, again, a lot of us probably share that, and that's what keeps you going. It's what fuels the, that passion. Is that Oscar?
It must be. Yeah. I couldn't tell if it was coming from your house or deep in the bowels of Alclair here.
My two are fat sound asleep over there on the sofa and the chair.
Yep.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And then the other thing is kind of that, like that next pursuit you have, it sounds kind of like for you, it's grouse hunting. You've been doing it for a while now, but you're still trying to learn more. For me, I learned something new about grouse hunting dang near every time I go. And I love that about it. But I have trying to layer in some of this stuff as I can. And sharptail hunting for me has been one of those things where it's, okay, let's take some of what I know and what I've learned and apply it somewhere else. And I'm a few years into that learning curve and getting, you know, my confidence is rising, and I'm really appreciative of that. I just, those new pursuits, I think they fuel us. And, you know, I'm probably about due for maybe another layer, adding another layer. Maybe I keep talking about pheasants and I'm not that far from them. I probably need to start that, but I know I got to get out there, especially now, you know, do you know if the pheasant season closes the same as like grouse, like New Year's Day?
It does. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we got another week.
I think
or two
it's
left
actually
here.
After that. I think we get through.
Is it?
Yeah. It's like, is it through Sunday or something this year? I don't know. Sometimes you get those extra ones. I'll have to check it out.
Typically, the Minnesota rough grouse season used to, I could be wrong, but I think it used to always end on December 31st. They recently changed it to New Year's Day, where we always end on New Year's Day. Wisconsin does it a little differently. They always end on the first Sunday after New Year's. So I don't know if that's pheasant season, maybe different too. But I'll have to check that out. But
yeah, well, that's exciting that you're pushing into the different things. I think it's really crazy. And it could be just as you get a little older, but when you start something new like that, it feels really weird to be not good at it, right? Like,
yes.
You know, when like you're a very good, you know, woodsman, a very good grouse hunter. And so now you're just layering on, like you said, these other layers. You're optimizing, you're learning more, but you're using all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're out on a different bird in a different place with other people. And it's like, whoa, you know? And
yes.
But it's really cool to then push your brain, you know, to learn more about it and to dig in. And then finally you get these breakthroughs and you feel like a little kid, you know?
Yes.
You feel like, whoa, like I started this and it was kind of overwhelming and weird. And now I'm starting to have some success. And then you start to push into that. And yeah, it's great for growth and all that stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we, you know, we need that. And I think, again, most people can probably have been through a similar situation with whether it's hunting or life or whatever, like it's getting out of your comfort zone and putting yourself in that new environment. And it really is like a lot of times it's like, it's startling, like how helpless you might feel. Or, and that's, you know, in those early stages, that's where I have the tendency to like just second guess everything and overthink everything. You got to keep at it. That's where like a little bit of discipline, because like, go again, just get out there, walk, you know, cover, go over the next hill. I don't know I have no idea where these sharptails are, but let's go check over here and check over there. And then you do it enough and you start to get that pattern recognition. You flush a few birds here and the confidence starts to build. And I mean, yeah, I certainly crave those kind of learning cycles, as that's like curiosity and learning, and it definitely drives me. And that's it's a healthy thing, but it maybe doesn't, again, that's like we do have that tendency to stay in our comfort zone, but I have to push myself to kind of get out of it and expand and grow.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's good. And I think I'm still there in grouse hunting. You know, I'm at the point where I did it so long where it was just surface level, and now I started to go deeper. So it's getting more beautiful and more rich. But now I'm like taking notes, like, okay, this is where I was. This is what it looked like. This is all, you know, because now I want to learn and get better. And But my tendency is always, because I'm pretty lucky living where I do, north of the Twin Cities suburbs, but I can drive 2 hours one direction, or I can drive 2 hours the other direction, and I can hunt.
Yeah, you got two totally different pursuits there.
Yep. Yeah. It's a, you know, it's pretty cool. But, and my natural inclination is to go south or southwest, because it's, I don't know, I just feel, and I even felt that this week, and I was like, nope, I need to go north, and I need to deal with whatever I'm going to deal with and push into it and, you know, give Oscar more experience there. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
Just on that note, is there anything, any like takeaway or two from this season that you're saying, like, I kind of leveled up here. Like my understanding of this aspect of grouse hunting, we leveled up here this year. Anything that sticks to mind, any theme or anything?
I think I could say that about woodcock hunting. I think I leveled up there. I pushed into it a little bit more. I was lucky to, you know, go out with some people that are really good at it and spend some time. That helps. I mean, you should do that. If you get asked, you should do that. I just spent some time paying a little bit more attention, and I did it more. I just got out there and did it, and I feel like that happened a little bit for me. Not maybe so much for grouse, but, and they're different, right? You think, my whole time I thought, oh, you just go into the woods there and there's going to be woodcock and grouse, but not quite that way. Like they don't always, they're in the same woods, but they don't live in the same spot or they don't always like the same spot. So yeah, I think I haven't had enough takeaways on grouse yet, but
just keep getting out there and doing it like you did yesterday and they'll come.
Yep. Yeah. I think we got a few more chances, hopefully.
Do you have late season hunt plans, travel plans back home around the holiday or back to Nebraska around the holidays, anything like that?
I kind of did a little bit of that, you know, just before Thanksgiving and a little after. But yeah, this is my big, so this year, I don't know if you know, but not everybody knows. So the big side of Eau Claire is actually music. So that's how we got into the ear game. My family was in hearing instruments and serving people with hearing loss. And that was where I just really didn't want to go. But, you know, like a lot of things in life here, you end up in a spot, you know, where you didn't think you'd be doing what you didn't think you'd be doing. But we do a lot in the music world, and we make earphones for musicians on stage. And that's kind of the big thing that we do. And since hunting was always a passion of mine, and I always wanted to do something in that world to get me more involved in it, hearing protection was something that we always tried to do. But, you know, sometimes in life you feel like you have this force field around you and you just can't quite get it. And finally we got in there and we started doing it. But every year in California in January, there's a giant music show. And so we always go out there and we always camp. Like we hook up our camper here in Minnesota and brave the January snow and ice, and we head south.
Hope for clear roads.
Yep. And yeah, hope is about all you got at that point until you can get down to like Oklahoma or something like that. And so we drive all the way out to California. And this year, my goal is to try and hunt some quail in Arizona, New Mexico, or maybe something in Texas. So I always, as I'm driving through there, I always thought, man, I really want to do this. And so that's going to be my
You're a bird hunter. Tail. You're looking around, you're seeing everything. And yeah. Yeah.
So now I got to connect with somebody maybe down there to, you know, get me some pointers or get me out on something. But I'm going to spend, after that week of that show, I think I'm going to spend, you know, maybe a week down there kind of bombing around trying to figure out what that looks like. And I think, like maybe some older Minnesotans, you know, January and February, it would be kind of nice to maybe be somewhere for those months. So maybe I'm searching for that, you know, a little place to camp down there.
I didn't think a whole lot about that, or I maybe even sort of thought that seems silly, like when I was 20 years old, but being 40, and a bird hunter, you start to think about, geez, boy, that, you know, the season can really extend if you get somewhere that has a little bit different climate. So I have with our young family, I don't have any plans to do anything like that yet, but I could see that in my future someday.
I mean, yeah, you can bird hunt all the way to February if you just put yourself out there, and if you can work, you know, out there. So I am blessed to be able to do that. So yeah, so that's my big plan. Hopefully it'll be nice, maybe in Nebraska in January, because pheasant hunting goes all the way through January down there, and or Kansas. And so if it's decent, I'll probably try and, you know, stop there, hunt a little bit. Yep. And then go up through Colorado and on throughout California and try to go somewhere, find something, to experience new things.
Being mobile and flexible like that, that could be helpful. Yeah, there may be a person or two or three listening that might have some pointers for you too. So they can get a hold of you. You're on Instagram. We'll have all that stuff in the show notes. But you also just kind of travel around with your camper and trailer for fun. You do that.
Yep.
I think a lot of times it's associated. I'm just recalling our conversation over lunch from a couple of years ago now that you might be at a show or a trade show or a music show or that kind of thing. But
yeah, we love it.
Did you go anywhere fun last summer or anything?
I don't think we went. So the previous year we went all the way out to Maine to Arcadia National Park.
Oh, cool.
So we try to hit those places. So, and that's, we generally do that in May, kind of before school lets out. And so, yeah, we've been, I think I've got something like 10 more states that I haven't camped in.
Okay.
So we're still trying to knock a few more of those off, but that was really cool. That's the first time I've really been all the way out there. And that, of course, is on my grouse bucket list. And that's what I was talking to Bob about on our podcast there and Kevin. I really want to get to New York or New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, or something like that. And, you know, you read all these William Hardin Foster, George Evans, Burton Spiller, you know, it's all, you know, little stone fences and crab apple, you know, little apple orchards and whatnot. And I know that they're not all there anymore, but I think getting out there and walking would be so cool. So, yeah. So, yeah, we love to travel around and have our little dog with us and go to different places. And it's a lot of what we do is we just tie that into our shows. So we work a lot with churches, making their in-ears for them. It was just an idea I came up with, you know, a marketing, you know, thing that gets me out and it gets us in front of our customers. I love to see how they're using the product and what kind of problems they might be having and what they need. And it's just really cool to be with them and then see them using them. So we just get out and then we can demo our products and take the impressions and travel around and see America. It's a cool thing.
Love it. I noticed you got those. I would not expect anything less, but you've got those slick in-ear monitors for the podcast. I'm going to have to hit you up about those. I got to get a bird shot set because I'm doing like the worst thing possible using wireless headphones for as a podcast host, but we could probably dial that in and get some.
Let's talk about
cool
it, man.
In-ear
yeah,
monitors.
I've been, every time I watch yours, I keep thinking, oh, I got to hit him up about those. He needs to get something. And a lot of the people that, you know, I've connected with through this that do podcasts have started using them. And what's funny is it'll be something that you use a whole lot more than the
right.
Hearing protection because you use them all the time for this or traveling or just listening to music or working
yep.
or whatever you're doing. Yeah, they're really cool.
I do remember when I came down to visit you. Gosh, I'm trying to think. Was that in September? It might have been before because where I was going with it is totally random. But I remember testing some of those. You were kind of showing me the differences between some of the sound and some of them. And I think it was before I was going to the Metallica concert that summer. And I remember listening to Master Puppets and Metallica on those in-ear monitors. So it just kind of brought back that memory. Can you do custom colors on the cords and stuff there? Or like, how does it, like the ones that you're wearing or no?
This just happens to be a studio model. So the cords.
It looks like
different.
It matches your shirt. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, no. No, most of the time they're black or clear. These okay. are made for more studio work, podcasting or whatever. So they're just a handmade copper cable. So
okay, let's segue there again. You've been on other shows over the years. I've listened to some of the episodes, so people are maybe familiar. But I mean, it was the hearing business that really brought you to Minnesota, right?
It was, yeah. The hearing Minnesota was and is one of the epicenters of hearing health in the whole United States. You know,
is that because of like just like our medical, like Mayo Clinic, that kind of stuff?
You know, I really don't know exactly what the impetus for it was, but it certainly became that. I mean, there must have been 20 or 30, you know, hearing aid manufacturers in the Twin Cities.
Isn't like Starkey Hearing based here?
Yep, Starkey's here.
Yeah. Okay.
And they've always been one of the bigger, you know, hearing aid companies. And I think they're one of the last U.S. based ones. So this industry has done that shrink where, you know, there were probably like 30 manufacturers, you know, little ones in every state. And now I think there's five. So they're just And most of them are in Europe and Starkey's here, so that makes them a little different. But yep, my father, oddly enough, worked for Starkey in the early days.
Okay.
He was one of the guys that started early on, one of the first employees, and he was like their vice president of marketing, along with Bill and Ron and all these guys that really were the ones that started that. And then several of them broke off to start their own companies. My father was one of those. And so he got my older brother into the hearing business. And like I said, I wanted to race cars and, you know, I was just a gearhead kind of, you know, engineering kind of guy and didn't really want to get into it. And so I went a different direction. And then years ago, my brother just invited me up to be part of a company that he was starting, which is the company that makes the goo that we shot in your ears, you know, the silicone. So yeah, that's kind of how I got in. I became a formulator, you know, chemist, compounder, and started making the silicones for other hearing aid companies. And that's kind of how I got into the business and then started making materials for mission work, for making ear molds for children in the mission field. And then that became, you know, a hearing protection product. And
okay.
Then my mind just started working and off I went. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing those big, like, vats of that silicone yep. stuff. Is that pretty much only used for ear products, or do you guys have other uses for that? I'm just curious.
For us, it's just hearing, but it's the same thing. It's a polyvinyl siloxane. So if you've ever gone to the dentist and they made a mold of your teeth, that's what they used.
For hockey mouth guards and that sort of stuff?
Yep. Or like if yeah. they're going to, if you're going to get braces and they need to make yeah. a mold of yeah. your mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's what, it's the same thing, except different, a little different formulation to do slightly different job at the same product. And yeah, and we've been doing that since the mid-90s. So still
okay.
making products.
The music, which came first, hearing protection or the in-ear monitoring for music?
Oh, in-ear monitoring. Yeah, no, way earlier on. You know, I think we've been doing that for about 20 years now. And we just kind of stumbled into that as well. A company was looking for someone to make in-ear monitors and asked me, and I was like, yeah, I don't know what those are, but sure, you know.
Okay, so you were making hearing aid products initially?
Just the silicones for other audiologists to make hearing aids. So you first, you take an impression of some of this, just like in-ear monitors or custom hearing protection. You make a mold of your ear, and then you send that mold into a company like us, and then we scan that and digitize it and then make an impression of your ear. We take the impression of your ear and we make a product for your ear. And so hearing aid companies have been doing that forever, you know, since the 1970s. And so we just wanted to come up with a better product for doing that. And that was kind of the whole background of that product. And then from there, we moved into the music world. And that was an eye-opening experience. And it's been really amazing. So just learning about what that group of people needed to do their job and
yeah.
the issues that they were having. And a lot of it just translated over to what we do in hearing protection. And I think that that's maybe what makes us a little different in this market, is we came not from here, you know, we did have a hearing background, but we weren't just hearing aid people. We were more music people.
Right.
And dealing with problems that people on stage would deal with: long use, sweating, good quality sound, high levels of customer service, you know, we're all really imperative for that group of people. And so we just kind of brought that all over to hearing protection. So, and yeah, and now we're probably, you know, we're in the top 3 or 4 companies in the world that makes products for musicians. And we're trying to get there when it comes to hearing protection. So
yeah, excellent, excellent. I was glad that we won't get into it here because Bob, you talked about this with Bob Owens, but he was asking some questions about like musicians and being on stage and the monitors. And like, I never really, I guess I maybe had some idea of how that worked, but you talked about the wedges and how, you know, they obviously are trying to hear the music, not the, you know, 30,000 screaming fans or whatever. But obviously the in-ear monitors makes a heck of a lot of sense. But I didn't know all the little details about, like, you know, like the drummer might, he only wants to hear certain things or all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure you've learned tons and tons about that as you've worked with more and more musicians.
Yep. And not every drummer wants to hear the same thing, or not every guitarist does, or vocalist. And they're, you know, as musicians, they're artists. So they kind of come about it different ways and want different things. And so, yeah, it's really kind of an in-depth thing, but yep, they don't really listen to the music like we listen to the music. If you just go to a show And one of the biggest parts of in-ear monitors is hearing protection. They're hearing protection first, because they're, we go to Metallica concert every now and then, and they go, you know, every night. So the engineers and the sound people and the musicians themselves, you know, they're literally blasted with sound all the time. And because of that, they lose their hearing. They have ringing in their ears and all the things. So in-ear monitors and those earphones have really been instrumental in getting, you know, people to protect their hearing in that market. So it's really a big deal.
I have seen Metallica twice in my life. One time I did not wear hearing protection. The second time I definitely did. The first time I was 18 years old and was not prepared for the pyrotechnics and the sound. I had a great time, but I believe there may have been some damage done that evening.
I think so. Yep. Lots of damage. It's a crazy thing.
When it comes to digital hearing protection, because that's kind of the way, that's the way things are going. Obviously, technology makes that possible. And of course, anybody would, you know, we've all probably arrived at this, like when you're hunting, yes, we want to block out the gunshots, but we still need to hear other things. We need to hear our surroundings, our bird dogs, birds flushing, that sort of thing. So that was, it sounds to me like that was pretty much just built into your company, like from the beginning. Or was there a point where you said, hey, the digital stuff is, I mean, you're working on hearing aids, but I guess just talk me through like how much has that advanced and how does that make digital hearing protection for hunters possible?
So it's been around a long time, and basically it is like, it is a hearing aid, you know, in essence. It's listening to ambient sounds, and it's taking those ambient sounds and putting them through a processor, and then taking that process sound and putting into your ear. And that is a really cool thing, you know, that it can do that. It also is a thing that sometimes people struggle with, is you're not listening to just what you're used to listening to, the ambient sound. You're listening to sound that has been engineered. And so for people with hearing loss, it's great, because now you can amplify areas of people's hearing that they haven't heard in a while and try and smooth everything back out. That's oversimplification, but in the hearing protection world, it's basically doing that same thing, except sometimes you're dealing with people with hearing loss and sometimes you're dealing with people that have great hearing. So you're creating this barrier, which is just a solid, you know, acrylic with silicone that is blocking them from the shot, along with some things that we do with the armatures and inside. We don't let them go over a certain dB and things like that. So basically, once it is seeing a sound over a certain decibel, then it just goes into compression, or it's just shutting down and sealing your ear off. So now you've just got a solid earplug. But when those loud noises aren't going, you want to hear everything. So then it's listening to all the sounds that are going on out there, and it's trying to deliver you the ones that you want to hear and not deliver you the ones that you don't want to hear, because it's like an amplifier and it's like a microphone, you know. They make a lot of noise. Microphones are notorious, especially outside, for hearing wind and all, and it's just amplifying everything, and it gets to be too much, and or you're not hearing the things that you want to hear because you're hearing too much of something else. And your brain is a processor, and it's using your ears. All those sounds are the sounds that are really going on, but your brain is saying, don't need to hear that. I'm just going to shut it off. And, or I need to hear that, so I want to hear it more. And so now when you put something like this in your ear, you're basically having to kind of give your brain a little time to rewire itself to understand this is what sound sounds like now. And you kind of have to blank out some of the things that you don't want to hear and press into the ones that you do. And the hearing instruments chip that's in there is trying to do all of that for you all the time at the same time. So, which is really important in upland hunting, more so than waterfowl hunting and things where you can kind of get away with an earplug with a filter, you know, that you can hear through, but it's not really amplifying anything because everybody's in sort of close proximity to one another. And as long as you have good hearing, something like that works. But in a lot of cases, you do need amplification to replace what's being blocked so that you can enjoy all the cool stuff we just talked about for the last however long, you know, all the things that we just, that make us want to be out there and doing what we do. Hearing, a lot of times you don't even think about that part of what it is that we're doing while we're out there in the woods. But if you stop for a second, it's probably like one of the most important things, because if you take that away, the experience really suffers. You know where you are, but if you're not hearing what's going on, then you're really not experiencing where you are. And so it really takes away a lot. So having something with amplification really helps kind of put that back.
some forms of hunting are more visual, or if you're stationed, like you said, like if you're sitting in a duck blind, you know, there's a couple things. Number one, you're not moving around, so you're not making as much noise yourself. You're close to your buddies probably, and you're visually seeing a lot of what's going on. You're not waiting to hear a goose flush. You're seeing that, but you're probably going to be around a lot more gunfire. So the need for hearing protection is higher.
Especially for someone like a guide, you know, that's right. In it all the time, trying to, you know, hear birds behind and hear birds coming in waterfowl hunting. That is a big deal. You know, as you grow up, you get used to looking at your dog because your dog can hear so much better and they're looking, you know, because they're used to hearing birds. And then you get hearing protection with amplification. All of a sudden, man, you're hearing whistling wings again, and you're hearing ducks and geese a long ways away. But I think that group can get away without it. But having amplification makes it such a more beautiful experience. Like if you haven't heard duck wings, you know, whistling in from behind, man, it's one of those cool experiences as well. So being able to replace that or put something back in is really cool.
Yeah. And then just to kind of take that a step further, I think, again, this won't really be news to anybody listening probably, but the upland hunter, they have those other things kind of working against them. They're moving around more. They're maybe making more noise in the grass. Maybe you have more wind noise. I've always found, like, especially with yours, the wind, I mean, maybe it's your technology, but the wind it is a really good job of like not blowing the microphones, that kind of thing. So wind noise is really, really not an issue. The thing that has been a hindrance for me is, and I want to ask you about this, is I think I get like that base level of like, and you said something that makes a lot of sense. Like my brain is tuning out a lot of stuff that I'm just don't need to hear. When you put the hearing protection in, it's kind of like this baseline level of white noise that just rises. So like everything rises. And is that, I guess, first of all, is that common? And then is that something where if you have them in for 5 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, does that eventually kind of tune down? Do you expect that to tune down, or how does your brain handle that?
Sure. Yep. And you're absolutely right. It does. And it's one of the things that upland, a lot of people that use them struggle with at first, because, and it's a couple things. It's us, like you said, like I wear hearing instruments, and those that do, you know, if you have high frequency hearing loss and you put a hearing instrument in that now puts that back for the first 20 minutes of your day, you're hearing a hiss because the world is hissing, you know, and you're just not hearing it anymore. Like the refrigerator is running, there's a machine over there that's on, different things are making sounds and you just don't hear them. So there's that part. So if you have any high frequency hearing loss and you put something in, you're going to start hearing those things again, and you're not used to hearing them, and they're annoying. And it's one of the most common things in hearing instrument life is what, you know, what's that noise in my kitchen? Well, that's the refrigerator. And everybody else can hear it too, but everybody tunes it out. So I think it is, you're right on that. You know, you have to leave them in for a certain amount of time until your brain recalculates itself to knowing that that's not what you need to hear. And it will just start to shut it out, and it'll bring in the things that you do. On top of that, though, you have to spend a fair amount of time kind of dialing them in to getting used to what it is that you hear, because everybody has a different level of hearing and everybody's ears are a little bit different. It's funny because literally I just did a video about this the other day that I'm going to put out on our channel, because it's such a big deal and we get a lot of that. The number one thing probably is wind noise. So I'm glad you brought that up, that you say you don't have wind noise problem in our ears, because that's the first question everybody asks. Because if you're a plains hunter or someone who's, you know, sharp tail pheasant, I mean, wind is like brutal. And wind is one of the things that we focused a lot on trying to stop. So you not hearing it is good, because that is a big deal. And the other thing is trying to put in the things that matter and take out the ones that don't, like stuff brushing against your pants and your jacket and different things like that. And if you go out and you pay attention, you hear those things without them in. You just don't realize you're hearing them because the intensity is lower, or you've just heard them so much, your brain just says, that's no big deal.
It's like you can't deny that sound is there. It's the hearing protection's not making it up.
Right.
But I think a lot of it is your brain tuning it down or out or something.
The other thing that I've heard a lot, and you know, Kevin was one of the ones that brought, you know, was really big on this early on. And I was like, man, it sounds like I know that whatever Nick is over there about 20, you know, 50 yards, but it sounds like he's 10 feet from me. So I don't know where anybody is. And it's kind of freaking me out a little bit.
The directional.
Yep. So, you know,
and
that
distance,
the directionality is there. Like, you know where people are, but things don't, they don't sound where they are in that frequency, you know, distance. And so one of the big things that people deal with these is having them too loud. And because when you put them in, you feel like you can't hear anything. Right. And so
it
then
just
you
immediately changes. Like, it's, I think that's the, like, again, you know, this as well as anybody, there's a bit of education that you need with these, because
100%
when it's like a product, like, it's not something that you're not going to put them in and it's immediately going to be like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing in the world, because there's such an adjustment to your natural hearing, what you know all along.
Yeah.
And it, when you put that in your ear, like, you, we know how sensitive we are. Like, it changes the way you're perceiving the world around you. So,
yep.
Again, I sorry to cut you off there, but help us.
Oh, it's the truth.
Understand, like, what's going on there
in your world with, like, shotguns. You know, like, if you get a poor fitting shotgun, or you haven't spent the time, like, you're like, I bought this. I spent $3,000 on this thing. I can't hit anything with it. There's something wrong with the gun. Well, no, the gun's fine. You just haven't either. You haven't gotten it fit to yourself. You're mounting it wrong. You haven't talked to anybody about that. And you maybe haven't went and practiced, you know? And so once all those, as you know, once all those things come together, then everybody, you know, then these people have like this joyous, like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. And that is exactly what we find with this, is that you do have to put in some time and you have to dial things in, and knowing that the routines are big, but everybody tends to put them, you know, turn them up too much, because you put them in and then you think you can't hear anything, and then you turn them up and you're hearing too much. And one of my little tricks that I do is, and I'm right there with you. Like, I deal with the same things that everybody deals with, or did, you know, when I first started using them. And that's what led to a lot of how we shape the frequencies and do that, because of the problems that I had and the problems that I heard everybody else have. Like, when you first got yours, I was like, once you get these, you're going to have problems. Tell me what your problems are so I can figure out, because you're going to be in an area where you have problems that maybe someone that is hunting chukar isn't going to have. And so I want to hear all these things, and so that I can dial them in and figure them out. And, but one of the things I do, especially in the woods, is I can hear Oscar's bell, and then I'll take one out and then I'll hear it. I'm like, oh wait, it's a lot quieter than it is with my hearing protection in. And then I'll put it back in and I'll dial
them
back.
Then you know your hearing protection's too loud.
Right. Yeah. Because he sounds like he's right here, but he's, you know, 40 yards away. And so I use his bell, and I know what it sounds like, and I hear
That's
him.
Cool.
And so I'll take one out, and then I'll like, oh yeah, I've got these cranked way up, because you can hear hissing and a lot of static, because you are amplifying the natural sounds that are there way too much, because you're like, I don't want to miss a bird flush or these kind of things. So I feel like I can't hear. And then so then I dial them back. And then I take one out again, and I'm like, okay, yep, that kind of sounds like what it is with my ambient ears. And then all of a sudden, everything just sounds so much better. Everything is quieter, but you also have to believe that you can hear, you know? And that's a big thing. It's like, you have to trust that you are hearing what the world sounds like at the volume that you've got your hearing protection set at. And that is not an overnight thing. That takes a little bit of time and a little bit of practice. And you can do it just going for a hike. You don't have to do it when you're hunting, where you're like, oh, I only get this chance every so often, you know, and I don't want to blow it. Just go for a walk in the woods, you know, and listen to what things sound like. The crunching of the snow under your feet. Yep, you can hear that. And then you put these in, and now the crunching is really loud, but if you back them off, you can still hear the crunching. And then at some point you have to trust that, oh, I can really hear everything that's going on, because the processor in here, like you said, it's not making things up. It's taking what's actually going on and putting it in. And even though it's trying to compress or block things, it's also opening up and trying to help you hear things like human voices and things like that, that are kind of a ways off. And once you get them dialed in, then you become shocked at how far you can hear somebody talking to you, not loud. Like, you can just speak in a normal voice and hear someone that's 20 yards away in the woods. And you can't really hear that with your open ears. you know? So it's taking things like that and raising them up and taking things that you don't want to hear and crunching them down. And it's doing it, you know, 200 times a second all the time. So once you dial them in with the programming and the volume, the chip is actually listening to all this stuff and saying, ah, Nick doesn't want to hear that. Oh, Nick really wants to hear that. And it's adjusting that all at the same time as well, on top of everything that you do. So it's just all about kind of getting them dialed in. And I'd have to do that differently from when I'm in the woods or if I'm in the field or in the mountains or wherever. It's always different.
Are you changing? Is that just a different mode, or how do you make those adjustments?
Sometimes it's mode, but sometimes it's volume, and sometimes it's just trusting, getting used to what it is. I can definitely tell you that they're easier to use in a duck blind or in the prairie than it is in the woods. I mean, because you get so much reflection there, and you're stomping through tall grass or, you know, you're trying to hear your dog that you can't see. And so you're starting to rely on your hearing more than your eyes. And the flushes come fast and you don't have much time. I mean, it's not like you have plenty of time to get your gun up and shoot. So I think hunting in the woods is like the ultimate, or one of the ultimate difficult places to begin to use it. But also it's pretty loud. You know, if you fire your shotgun in amongst the woods, you get a lot of reflection and it's hard on your ears. So it's like duck hunting in that aspect, where you've got a lot of guns in really close proximity to yourself. There you don't, but you also have a lot of reflection and a lot of chance for ringing your own ears in the woods. So yeah, I think that's kind of it's tricky.
Indeed. But man, you described two things. I mean, I think, like, me to a T basically. I think the first thing for sure I did, you know, you put them in and I don't know if it's that it's the pressure in your ear or just the change in the sensation, because it's different. But it's like you said, you feel like your hearing is diminished because, oh, I just put something in my ear and it's blocked. So what do? You crank it up, and then you get that, all that extra stimulus. And I mean, you just gave me a heck of a tip. I've never thought to, like, okay, let's take one out, listen to the bell, try to dial it in based on that, find that baseline. That's a great tip right there. And then I would say for sure, when you get them, I mean, if you go hunting the next day, sure, try them. But, like, don't try to do it right when you're going to a hunt. Put the collar on the dog. Do all of that stuff. You know, like, do it when you're going for a walk. And yep, the stakes are lower. You know, you do that acclimation period. That's the one thing that I have done to get a lot more comfortable with my wearing them for longer periods of time, is just wearing them on exercise runs.
Yeah. And around the house, even. I always tell people, just use them at home for a week in the garage or doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
So that you can acclimate. Cause yeah, putting them in when you go at like you said, a high
stakes.
It's
just that one other thing that you're so much more likely to say, ah, screw it.
Oh,
you
know, absolutely. Pull these things out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. Cause you don't want to ruin that experience.
So I want to at least cover a little bit of, like, sort of your, cause you've got a few different products. I've got the EXP for the EXP Pro. So full custom molded digital. What else do you have, and what separates them, just for folks that are curious?
So those are the only active ones that we currently have, and active meaning they're amplified, right? So you put them in and you can hear more than what you can hear with your ears normally. And then we have some passive products. So we have just a passive silicone, which is just it's a chunk of silicone in your ear. So it's what you would use if you were just sighting in a gun or, you know, running a chainsaw, whatever, things like that. Inexpensive, but it just blocks everything.
And that's a custom fit,
yep,
option, but it's just total blockage.
Total blockage, yep.
Yep. Okay.
And then we have one that has a little filter in it. So it's the same product, but we put a little, what we call an impact filter. And that filter allows some sound to come through until that sound goes over a certain threshold, 80, 90 decibels. And then it crushes that sound and becomes an earplug again. And what's cool about that is, like, I use them all the time, like, in the garage working or whatever. If you're running an impact wrench or doing whatever you're doing, a saw, you can still hear, like, the radio or someone talking. Once you engage the machine, it just clamps down. And those are fine for hunting, too. And they allow you to get in. One of the problems I always had in this industry is it seems like these things are so expensive that I thought no one's going to want to buy them. I'm finding out that's not necessarily true. And now everything's getting more expensive, right? But we always try to keep our price down so that it would be, because it's so important that people use them. I didn't want it to feel like it was this giant barrier to get in. So the silicone products with impact are great. if you don't have hearing loss, you know, for a younger person to just kind of get into getting used to doing it. It's a great product for that. You know, this is kind of a funny little side thing, but when I talk about younger people and older people, in the music world, people, you know, older musicians didn't use in-ear monitors, right? It was a new thing, you know, in the late 90s. It was something that only the highest level people could even afford. Yeah. Like a set of in-ear monitors was $5,000, right? Wow. Now you can get them for $250. You can still get some very expensive ones, but the cheapest ones were really expensive. In the early 2000s, that's when they started to really catch on, right? So still today, if an older person that has always played with wedges puts them in, they don't like them. They're like, this is not what the world sounds like, and I don't like the way my music sounds. And there's lots of reasons for that, right? Because you have to do the same thing with an in-ear monitor. You have to adjust the input signal to make your instrument sound like it sounds live. And you know, and big shows, there's a person whose job is to do that. And you've always seen on TV or whatever, if one of those people start pulling an ear out, that means someone's job is in jeopardy because they can't hear what it
that
is.
That was another tidbit on, but I found that.
Yep. And, but young people would say, I've only heard my guitar through my in-ear monitors. So that's what life sounds like. That's what my music sounds like. And they have no problem with it. You know, they'll want to get a better quality one. So the sound signature is wider, it's finer, you know, it's less accentuated, different things that they want. But now putting something in their ears and playing is just totally natural. And we'd always talk about that. And then I was like, wait, that's the same thing with hearing protection. If you've been hunting in the woods for 10, 15, 20 years, and this is what the world sounds like, and all of a sudden you're putting something in, it's like, oh, you know.
It's foreign. Yeah.
It's foreign, and it makes everything weird. If you started someone off at 15 years old or 18 years old when they first start doing it and wearing them in 20 years, I'd be like, yeah, what are you talking about? Like, this is what the woods sound like. And my ears don't ring and I can still hear. So, you know, because now we see older people that can't hear, and it's frustrating for them and it's frustrating for us. So I'm one of those. So that's just this kind of funny little side thing. I guess I don't know where I was going, but.
Yeah, the music stuff, I find that interesting. Talk to me about the modes, the modes in the EXP Pros that I have. They're like kind of like, well, I don't know, how would you describe a template or like a. You know, what changes from mode to mode? Because that is the one thing I will say is I've used the EXP Pros from you, Alclar. You guys sent me a pair of those. I appreciate that. I have also used a pair that were similar in custom molded hearing protection, and they were a lot more expensive, and they were not any better. I would say that. So yours are as good or better on every level. You have these modes, and that's just a fact, but I have always appreciated that. And I remember you saying that when we were having lunch, is just the cost scares so many people away. And then because it is this product that, again, it isn't like you get it and it instantly makes your life better. There's this kind of learning curve and education. I think a lot of people get hung up on that, but there's reason for hope here. And
I'm actually surprised how some people take to it so quickly. Like some people are just like, oh, I love these, like no problem at all. And I'm like, oh, well, that's great. It's not the same for everyone, for sure.
But anyways, the modes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have four modes in there. And if you just think, I mean, if you looked at a graph, you know, where there's just, could be a graph of anything, you know, stock market or whatever, it starts at somewhere and it ends at somewhere. And if you think of the sound, it starts at like DC or zero, and our testing goes to about 20,000 hertz. You can only, you know, only generally hearing instruments are generally somewhere around 400 hertz to 8,000 hertz. And in the music world, it's much wider. And so we also test all of our stuff to the wider standard just because that's what we do. And so if you think of a sound wave, you know, low sounds are low frequencies, 20 hertz, 30 hertz, 40 hertz. That's the really low sounds. And then the high frequencies, high pitched noises are in the thousands. And so you look at this graph and it goes through the lows and to the highs. And so if you have a hearing loss, most of the time you still have low frequencies on your cochlea. Hearing damage happens when the little hairs that are wiggling on it, this is definitely an oversimplification, but they get mowed down from these high frequency sounds, and then you lose, if they're not operating, then you're not getting those signals to your brain.
And they don't come back.
And they don't come back. Once you lose it, so far you've lost it, and you have to put a hearing instrument in or something. But those, the hairs that hear the high frequencies are the closest to your eardrum, and the ones that hear the low frequencies are on the backside away from your eardrum. So you could say that that's why the high frequencies get killed before the low frequencies, because they're closer there. Plus, you know, you hear low frequencies through your face. You know, your eardrum is vibrating, and it's vibrating the cochlea. Well, when you go to Metallica concert, your face is vibrating, your chest is vibrating, and that's why you feel that low end and that emotion, and that's real exciting and really cool. And then things that you hear that are for discrimination or understanding are the high frequencies, like T's and S's. And so if there's a loud environment and you can't hear what someone's saying, because you're not, you know they spoke a word, but you don't know what that word is, it's because you're having trouble hearing those high frequencies. And the worst place to try and hear them is like in a restaurant or something like that, where there's all kinds of this ambient sound and silverware clamoring and stuff like that. So that's what, that's kind of the frequency idea, right? And so what we do is on the first frequency, we just kind of make it flat. So it just is normal, as you could imagine. But thinking it's putting something back in, but it's not really trying to accentuate anything. And so then in the program two, it sort of starts to raise the highs up a little bit, because those are the things where you're trying to localize and hear. So we just kind of raise the highs up a little bit. So in essence, you're kind of overcoming maybe a natural hearing loss. And I'll say, you could get hearing loss if you've never shot a gun or were around any loud noise. Just as you age, you may get hearing loss as well. So this just helps kind of stave some of that off. And then program three, we just raise the highs even more and lower the lows a little bit. So it makes things a little bit more aware. So if you have more of a hearing loss, it starts to overcome that more. But it also brings a lot more situational awareness. Like if you're sitting in a deer stand against a tree, I mean, you're going to hear twigs, you'll hear a squirrel.
You want to hear that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you want to hear something coming in. And then program four actually it's starting to be called an upland program, but it really came from a couple guys that were like, oh, I'd like to, like turkey hunting and grouse hunting, I'd like to hear some more low sounds. And so we had it just nothing there. And so I started raising the lows and lowering the highs. And we also messed with the compression to kind of take away some more of that hiss and different things like that. So program four has sort of become that program. And that's kind of how we lay it out. And so, and I'm not a game specific frequency person, like, oh, this is elk hunting and this is whatever, pheasant hunting or upland or whatever. I just always have felt I used my same ears no matter what I was hunting before I used hearing protection. So basically, I just want to put back in what I'm missing and be able to hear whatever it is and then protect my hearing. So what you may love about program two, someone may not like that because it doesn't work for them. They like four or whatever. So that's why I tell everybody you have to try the different ones and then get your volume level set to where everything sounds normal and then decide. And some people will, I just run program three. I never change it. I love it. It's all I want to use. And some people are like, oh, I use one for this. And I, when I'm shooting sporting clays, I use number four. And that's great. Some people want to dial things in a little bit more than others. And for some, one program works. So that's kind of our thinking around the programs.
So you're a set it and forget it guy. What do you use?
I tend to use program four a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Kind of two and four seem to be the ones that I really gravitate towards. I mean, I have a little hearing loss, so I think one doesn't always do it for me. Yeah, that tends to be what I do. Okay. Is there one that you've kind of gravitated towards?
I have not invested enough time like experimenting with the different modes. Like I get them in and I run with them. But honestly, like what you just said about program four, when I go for about when we're done with this, I'm going to be taking my dogs for a run today. I'm going to do program four in the woods today, and I won't be hunting, but I want to see how that goes, because I'm really curious now after how you described that.
That's cool. Yeah, it's important to give them a try.
What's on the horizon for hearing protection? Anything, obviously technology and microphones and little components and stuff continue to advance. Is there anything that like has your attention as of now or not really?
I don't think technology wise there is. I mean, I think some companies are really trying to push into technology, and I think that's great. There's always a lot to be learned from that. I don't think in reality there's that much technology available in the market space that's going to change anything drastically. I think that we'll probably be messing with programming maybe as we learn more, and we might be doing things as far as sound goes. And, you know, there's always better quality products that will be put in them. I think for me personally, and I think for Alclair, I think the quest is changing people's minds and hearts about wearing hearing protection. I think that's really, it's what I keep talking about. It's what our focus is. We're a company that's about like serving people. We like I talked about in the music, when I see you wearing our product and you're just having a great time and playing or doing whatever it is you're doing and you're really enjoying it, that's what we live for. It's not about the product itself. It's what it does for you and how it changes your environment or how it makes your environment better. So I think our quest is to try and make these things part of people's kit. You know, if in five, like I keep saying, if in 5 years or 10 years, that's just normal, like people just wear hearing protection when they hunt, I think that will be why we did what we did really in this market. I always say your future self will thank you, you know, and your children will. And, you know, when people start hearing and protecting their ears, because like you said, you don't get it back. So I think that's our big deal. That's why I love to talk to people about it. I think, yeah, we just want to normalize it and make it like, yeah, everybody just, you know, when they get ready, you know, we grab our guns, our shells, our vests, all this stuff, and we grab our ear pro. And everybody, you know, if you're out hunting, everybody's wearing it, and it could be different brands. I also am one, like, you know, there's a million ears, more than we could fill. So I have no problem with what, you know, I just want people to wear hearing protection, whether they buy it from us or buy it from someone else. I think that's the big quest.
Well, that's a worthy and admirable mission, Mark. And I know, again, from getting to know you and visiting the shop down there, that's what you guys are trying to do. So I appreciate it. And I'm not afraid to admit it. I mean, this is not this hearing protection thing, it's not something for me that just clicked. Like, it has been, it's been like a learning curve. And honestly, I've learned more about it today just talking to you. So I'm really glad we connected for this. And I'm going to keep at it because it's so silly. It's just one of these things where it's like, hey, if you ask somebody, do you want to lose your hearing or do you want to keep it? You know, like we know how you're going to answer that question, but then we do things that don't align with that desire. So
in more than just hearing in life, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully this conversation moves the needle for some folks, myself included.
Yeah. But I would also say you're not weird. It doesn't come to everybody easy, and it's not the most normal thing. And it takes a lot of time, just like it does musicians wearing them to get used to doing and dialing in their mix, as they call it. We have to dial in our mix, and it takes a little bit of time. And some people come to it just like, oh yeah, you know, I put them in, it doesn't care what program it is, but, you know, I just love them and I just use them. And I hear that a lot. And some people struggle, and I hear that a lot. And so it's something you just got to kind of work on. And we'd love to get any feedback from you as you press into your quest. So,
yeah, I will definitely do that. Before we wrap, somebody's listening, they're interested, custom fit. There's a step for that, right? Of course, we do custom fit shotguns and getting gun fittings and that sort of thing. What's the process for a little bit easier? Because I think it's a little easier to get molds than it is to get in front of one of these gun fitters. But what would somebody do if they wanted to get a pair of custom hearing protection?
Yeah. For ours, you'd just go to, you know, Alclair or alclairoutdoors.com. And in there, you'll get all kinds of information of what the products do and what you need. And on our support tab, it tells you all about getting impressions. But basically, you'll just reach out. I mean, if you're in Minnesota or Wisconsin or that area where you can come to Minneapolis and get your impressions done, we do it all for free. And you can see how we make all of this stuff. If you're in Nashville or that area, we have a shop there as well where we, you know, take impressions and do all that. So hopefully we're widening that out. Otherwise, you just Google search your zip code for a hearing aid professional or audiologist, give them a call and find out what they charge to get impressions, ear impressions done. And then you just roll in there and they'll check your ears and take impressions and hand them to you. And then you just place an order with us online, ship them into us, and then we take it from there. We keep hold your hand along the way and tell you what's going on and build your product and get it out to you.
Yeah. And that was for the other hearing protection that I got. It was a, you know, quick Google search, and there was somebody right in my town that it's a fairly common thing. If you live in a town of decent size, you're going to find somebody to do these impressions. So,
yep. It's not like gun fitting.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to get that done. I need to do that one of these days. I think that would be a really cool experience. I was going to try to come up to the grouse camp when he was up there and it just didn't work or whatever, but yeah, I would love to come up there.
Next May, we were just exchanging emails with Mr. Whitman this week. So early May, if you're not out turkey hunting or you want to go turkey hunt up there, we'll get you up there.
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah, that would be so rad. I'd love to get that done. I think that experience would just be so cool. Like I said, you're just always dialing things in and dialing things up. And that's one of those things where you just feel like, man, I'm taking this to the next level. And that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a fun process. I talked to very few people that have gone through it that didn't learn something or enjoy it, kind of like this conversation that we had here today. So
yeah,
Mark, I appreciate your time, everything that you're doing for the hunting community and your mission, you and the whole crew there. Keep up the great work. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. It's really fun to do what we do and try and make a difference. And yeah, it's rad.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, my friend.
You as well. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Birdshot Podcast. We'll catch you on the next episode, everyone. Hey, everyone. It's your host, Nick, here. One more thing before you go. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes to this episode. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I will send you some of these Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a thank you for doing so. Thanks, everyone. Catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast.